As Daniel said, my name is Bill Houth, and before I get started here, just wanted to do a quick recap of what we've gone over so far during this conference. I also want to thank all of you for coming. This has been great. It's actually a better attendance than I thought we would have. This is awesome. God works. Yeah. Our first speaker, Pastor Sean, he talked about humility and how a man should be humble. Then our second speaker comes in and talks about how we should be a leader of our family. And then our third speaker tells us to be present, proactive, and purposeful. All these are traits of leaders. And then I am going to speak to you about leadership, how a man can be a leader. So I thought it prudent that I would talk about a certain leadership style. Pastor Jim opened up our welcome at the beginning of the conference yesterday, stating that the leaders here are servants first, that they are here to serve you and give you what you need to be successful. And so that leads me into servant leadership. Now, there are many different types of leadership. You got the authoritative, the transformational, the transactional, the democratic, the coaching leader, the laissez-faire leader. But to be a godly leader, you need to be a servant leader. So I'm going to go over a textbook definition, because I used to be a professor, so I opened up my textbook, and I said, what is a servant leader? A servant leadership style is based on the idea that leaders prioritize service for the greater good. Leaders with this style serve their team and organization first. They don't prioritize their own objectives. These people are leading in a servant leadership environment where the people that are being followed, their followers, feel like their voices are heard. This makes them 4.6 times more likely to apply themselves to their best ability. The term leadership, the servant leader, was coined by Robert K. Greenleaf in 1970, but I submit leadership style was way before him. We have examples in the Bible that show very strong servant leaders, which we will get to here in a minute. But basically, they prioritize service for the greater good. They serve their team first. They don't prioritize their own objectives, and they seek to achieve a vision by providing strong support to their people. Servant leadership hinges on building influence and authority rather than controlling in a toxic leadership environment. Now, we've all been there. You've all had a boss that you say, oh my God. And if you were ever in the military, you know exactly what I'm talking about. These leaders set strategic vision and they communicate it to all levels. They encourage ownership and extend support. They provide resources and training, and they allow their team to reach their goal through their own processes. So it's a bottom-up empowerment. So how does this leadership style translate to being a godly leader? I thought the best way to do that was to go to the Bible and just look at some examples of what kind of leaders there are. I think the best learning technique is to learn by example. And the best leader that you can be is to lead by example. And if you've had children, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because they will mimic you completely. So if you slip up and cuss, they're going to be right behind you with that same word. You lead by example. So the first leader, Noah. Leaders do what's right even when they're alone. In Genesis 6, God is despairing over the wickedness of the world that has taken over humanity, and reluctantly, he wants to wipe out the entire human race and start over. Noah, however, has not been corrupted. God tells him to build an ark that will save his family. In Genesis 7:1, the Lord then said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation." Literally, the whole world was doing wrong. Did that deter Noah from doing right? Leaders do what's right even when you are alone. Second leader, Abraham. Leaders embrace the unknown. God approached Abraham in Genesis 12:1. The Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, your father's household, to a land that I will show you." In other words, leader was instructed to leave his comfort zone. And we all have a comfort zone, every single one of us. And we like to sit in it and not be disturbed. But when you are asked to do something outside of your comfort zone, are you the type of leader that is going to go ahead and jump into that and lead by example for those others? Great leaders embrace uncertainty because they know the truth that the promised land awaits them on the other side. Third, Joseph. Leaders endure in spite of circumstance. Now, we all know this story in Genesis 37, and it's a powerful story because this guy had a tough life. He was sold into slavery by his jealous brothers. His father was told he was killed by wild animals. He was framed by his boss's wife because he refused to sleep with them, and he ended up in prison. And then he interpreted a dream for a prisoner that got set free and restored to his position, and the guy forgot about him. But in the end, Joseph became a strong leader in Egypt, second only to the Pharaoh. That put him in a position to save his family from starvation. And even though his brothers meant to do harm, God orchestrated this entire event so that he could save his family from starvation. Leaders have a vision that sustains them through difficult times. And we all go through difficult times, every one of us. Nobody said that when you became a Christian, it was going to be a cakewalk. You were going to have trouble. But good leaders embrace that and use it to encourage others. Fourth leader, Moses. Leaders stick up for their people. Yes, it's true. God had to convince him. I mean, a lot. Moses had excuse after excuse how he is not the guy for the job. But he finally answered the call. And I don't mean Charlton Heston. I mean Moses. He finally answered the call and approached Moses with an iconic message that we all know, "Let my people go." In Exodus 5:1, afterwards, Moses and Aaron went to the Pharaoh and said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go, so that they can hold a festival to me in the wilderness." The Israelites, Moses' native people, had been enslaved in Egypt, And Moses had been enlisted to set them free. Leaders are willing to step up when the time comes. How many of you ever been out there where somebody has asked you to do something? Maybe it's to teach a lesson. Maybe it's to do Sunday school. Maybe it's to work the media. Maybe it's to sing on the stage. And you're kind of like, I don't know. Leaders embrace that. Leaders take that on. Leaders show everyone else that despite my uncomfortableness, I can do the job because God is on my side and he will help me through it. Fifth, Joshua. Leaders rule by example rather than by command. In Joshua 24, after leading his people to the new land, Joshua offers the Israelites an option to either serve the God of their land or the God of their surrounding land that they're living in now. In Joshua 24, 14 through 15, "Now hear the Lord, now fear the Lord and serve him with your faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your ancestors, worshiped beyond the Euphrates River and Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether it's the God of your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites of those who you are living." And this is probably one of my most famous messages in the Bible. I just love this one. "But for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And as men in your household, you should be standing up to your house and saying, this household will serve the Lord." This is what Joshua did. And in unison, his people said, "We will serve the Lord," and dedicated them out their lives to the Lord of their God. Leaders lead by example. Now, earlier in one of the other messages, the speaker up here saying, I think it was John, he said, there is a big difference between a man leading the household and a woman leading the household. Right. And when a man stands up and leads the household, there's a 93% chance that that entire household is going to serve the Lord. As fathers and husbands, it is on us to lead our family by example, just like Joshua did right here. Sixth leader. I don't think I brought my water up here. Sixth leader. Leaders are not afraid of giants. David. Everybody knows this story. In 1 Samuel 17, the Israelites were being defeated by the Philistines in their a nine-foot giant. Oh, thank you. Goliath taunts the Israelites and challenges them to send one man. And if that man should defeat him, the Philistines would then become their servants. David, a small shepherd boy who could barely fit in the armor that he was provided, volunteered. And then, of course, Goliath mocks him. Daniel continues praying. I'm sorry. I lost my place, sorry. Yeah. Well, these pages stick. Well, I'm just going to go by memory. Yeah, because somehow I'm missing it. Okay, so David then says, you come to me with swords and spears and javelin, but I come to you with the word of God. So he takes his stone, he slings it, and he knocks Goliath dead on the spot. So leaders aren't afraid of giants, and they take on challenges. So in our lives, we face challenges every day. And you're going to continue to face those. And it's up to us as a leader to take on those challenges and lead those who are following. Leader number eight, or number six, I'm sorry. Leader number seven, you're right. Isaiah, leaders rise to the occasion. In a vision, Isaiah had a vision in Isaiah 6. God asked, who should I send as a prophet to the people? And Isaiah responds. In Isaiah 6, 8, then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? And I said, here I am, send me. So leaders don't wait to see if anyone else can go to step up and do the job. Leaders take the initiative, and I think we heard that earlier. Leaders take the initiative. Leaders are the first to raise their hand. They're first to stand. They're first to speak. They're first to make a decision. Leaders shun inaction. So as men, we should take the initiative. We should take on whatever challenges come on us and lead our people that are following us, mostly our families, to something better. Number eight, Daniel. Leaders maintain their resolve regardless of their consequences. Now, we all know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. In Daniel 6:10, now then Daniel learned that the decree had been published. When he went home to his upstairs room where the window faced towards Jerusalem, three times a day that he had kneeled down and pray, giving thanks to God for what he has done. Daniel was a high esteemed government official whose colleagues became jealous. Seeking to get rid of him, and knowing that he was a religious man, his colleagues convinced the king to enact a decree saying that prayer can be made only to the king. Daniel continued to pray and gave thanks to his God just as he always did. When he is caught, his colleagues tell the king, and he's thrown into the lion's den. But guess what happened? You know, the next morning, Daniel was fine. The lions were tamed. God protected him. Now, as leaders, I encourage you. I encourage you to seek the Lord and trust that he will take care of you in every situation. Because he will. He's a faithful God. And he will. If you seek him, he will provide. Daniel's faith in his God is what made him great in the first place. Knowing the repercussion, he didn't reluctantly release his praying. that he continued to pray. Great leaders follow this example and maintain a steadfastness in their conviction regardless of what has happened. So maintain your steadfastness with God. Keep seeking him. He will protect you. Leader 9, John the Baptist. Leaders aren't afraid to call out the phonies. John the Baptist in Matthew 3 is baptizing people and preaching about the coming of Jesus. When a pretentious, self-righteous group of religious officials come and investigate. And he calls them out. He says, "You, a brood of vipers." Matthew 3:7, "But when he saw many of the Pharisees and the Sadducees coming where he was baptizing, he said to them, 'You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the coming wrath?'" Leaders call it like it is. 10. Jesus, probably our best example of all. One of the most powerful images in the life of Jesus is when he was washing his disciples' feet. In John 13, 12 through 17, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on their clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he said. "You call me teacher, Lord, and rightfully so, for that is what I am. Now that I have washed your feet, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, no messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Jesus, of course, is not talking about washing his feet. He's talking about servant leadership. He's talking about serving one another. One of our commands of him is to serve one another. We are to love thy God with all our heart and soul. We are to love one another as Christ loved the church. And we are to serve one another. And wouldn't this world be a better place if we were all serving one another? I mean, if you walk out these doors and you even watch the news, you can see that everybody's looking for what they can get, not what they can give. Great leaders focus on serving those who follow them. Great leaders should be willing to wash other people's feet. Number 11, Peter. Leaders recover from failure. And you're going to fail. We're all human. We are all going to at some point fail, and a lot of times we learn our best lesson from our failures. And Peter learned a pretty good one right here. Peter, the most well-known disciple of Jesus, denies even knowing him 3 times when he's being crucified. Jesus had predicted this would happen, though Peter insisted that he wouldn't do it. When the rooster crowed, he realized just what he had done. But in Acts 2, we see that Peter gives his first sermon after Jesus' ascension into heaven to a crowd of 1,000 people. When he had previously denied Jesus 3 times earlier. So he learned from his mistake. He learned from his failure. Leaders don't stay discouraged when they fail. They don't wallow in self-pity. They don't give up if they have a mishap. They pick themselves up and continue. Leaders do better the next time. So I encourage you, if you fail, just pick yourself up, brush your pants off, continue forward. God will get you there. 12, and the final one, Paul. Leaders are passionate in what they believe in. Paul, throughout his life, recorded in Acts, was a very zealous individual. And as a Pharisee, he violently opposed Christianity. But then in Acts 9, something changed his mind. Jesus said, "What are you doing?" And then after that, Paul traveled across the world spreading the word everywhere he went. So in Paul, in Acts 9, 3 and 6, as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and he heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." So that event right there changed his life. And he took that on passionately. And he is one of the most prolific spreaders of the gospel there was. He went everywhere and did exactly what he was asked to do. Now, one of our greatest, every man out here is a leader. And I'll tell you why. Because you're a leader of your household. There is somebody that is looking to you as an example. So whether you like it or not, you're a leader. God has appointed you. And so some of you might aspire to being maybe a pastor, maybe a teacher. But I'd like to point out a couple of things, some requirements that has been set out. And we start out with Timothy. There it is. 1 Timothy 3:1-7. So basically what God is outlining here is the requirement to be an overseer. Here is a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. Now the overseer is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, tempered, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his family well and see that his children obey him, and must do that in a manner worthy of respect. If anyone does not know how to manage their own family, how could they manage or care for God's church? That is the big one right there. If you're going to highlight a passage, you highlight that one right there. You need to manage your own household first. Get your house in order, basically, is what this is saying. He must not be a recent convert or may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap. Titus has a very similar Titus 1, 6 through 9. For elders, an elder must be blameless, faithful to his wife, a man whose children believe and are not open to the charge of being wild and disobedient. Since an overseer manages God's house, he must be blameless and not overbearing, not quick to temper, not given to drunkenness, not violent, and pursuing dishonest gain. Rather, he must be hospitable, one who loves what is good, who is self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firmly to trustworthy messages as it has been taught, so that he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those that oppose it. So a leader is an encourager. Again, here a leader is getting his house in order. Stepping up in leadership could be scary, but don't be afraid. Remember, you walk in victory, not from victory. Christ has already fought the battle for you, and he's there. He's there to help you. Earlier, we talked about different races, I think I remember. You know how you prepare for a race. But Christianity, or a Christian, is the only race that begins at the finish line. You've already won. So, as the first speaker said, be humble. Wash your people's feet. Shed your flesh and serve those who are following you. As a father, be a leader. Men have the greatest influence in their family. Be there. Be present. Listen. Your wife wants you to listen. And I've been there. I've failed in every category here. You know, if we want to get a little personal here, I've had instances where I'd be watching the game, and my wife is over here, you know, talking. I hadn't heard a word she said. And then she asked me a question. I didn't hear you. I tried to pretend I did, but I didn't hear it. And she goes, you don't listen to me. Your wives want you to listen to them. They need it. And as a leader, we need to be ready to do that. What I should have done was muted the TV and turned my attention and just given her that however many minutes that she needed. But, you know, the flesh gets in the way and the Broncos aren't doing well. So, you know, you got to watch them, you know, mess it up again. So, after all of this, I encourage you guys, if the opportunity comes to serve, step into that position. Don't be afraid to do it. God has a plan for you. If you are being asked, there is a reason. It's not coming from the person asking you. It's coming from the Spirit. The Spirit is prompting that person to ask you. And if you're not going to do it, God's going to find somebody else. God's will not be hindered. It will move forward with or without you. Now, you can either be a part of it or not. You're being asked because that's God's, what he wants, but he will find another way. But I encourage you to be a part of it. I encourage you to step into it and step into your families and be there for them. And if you don't have a family yet, get yourself prepared, because success is preparation and opportunity that come together. That's when you get your success, and you have to prepare. And how do you prepare? Right there. Parable right there. You read this daily. You keep up on it, and you'll be prepared. Let's pray. Father, we come to you in humility. You are the King of Kings. You are the Lord of Lords. You are our great provider. You are our great teacher. You have provided us the word that we can be a leader. Help us to read it. Help us to understand it. Give us the understanding and the strength. We can do nothing without you, and we ask that you give us the strength to continue. You give us the strength to be a leader for our families first, and then for anyone else that you put in our path that needs some guidance and encouragement. And I ask that you touch each one of these hearts here and these men, and you just give them that zealous, the zealous of Paul. You give us the ability to get back up that Peter did. You give us the humility to wash feet that our King, our Lord of Lords, did. Now, if he can do it, we can do it.